Bill, how are you?
How you doing, Glenn? Pete, Steve,
Coach.
Coach, how are you?
Anything new? What's going on?
Anything happened?
Anything going on?
Trying to get ready for Buffalo.
These guys are looking pretty good.
Before we get to Buffalo and before we get to your team, we do obviously want to talk about what happened this weekend in the trade of Richard Seymour. Are you surprised that he hasn't reported out there and that it's been reported that the issue is back here with the Patriots and Richard Seymour?
Yeah, well, Glenn, I really can't say anything about the situation because the player's not, we don't have rights to the player. So it's really between him and Oakland, and I can't comment on that.
All right, let me ask you about the deal. In that you look at a deal, and you mentioned the other day in a statement, you say, we do what's best for the Patriots. Taking that into consideration, when you looked at this deal, how much consideration was taken into the 09 season versus the future, and how much does this affect the 09 season?
Well, I think there's a lot of things that are taken into consideration. You have to certainly look at the 09 season, and part of that's, of course, the 010 season, or the 2010 season.
What do we call that?
Is that 010?
Yeah, whatever.
And, you know, the balance of your team and your younger players and your veteran players and your money and potential contracts and all those kind of things. So, you know, that's and value. And so when we put it all together, we felt like organizationally this was, you know, a good value for the situation. And we know we're giving up something, but we're getting something.
Hold on 1 second. Could you have done this type of deal if you did not feel comfortable with some of the younger players that you had on that depth chart below Richard Seymour?
Well, certainly you've got to have confidence in your team, but at the same time, you know, Richard was a significant player. So, but again, we gave up something and we received something. So that's, you know, that's what the trade was.
How does this go about? The Raiders just call up, or is there, you know, Fearless dropped out, so they know he's available? They just called you up and said, we're interested in Seymour.
Well, they inquired about it. You know, we looked at your situation. You know, would you consider this? And they mentioned a couple things when we were having the conversations about Derek Burgess. And then that kind of went for a while. And then last week we talked to them again. They called us and we talked to them again, and they said, well, have you changed, and would you consider this? And we considered it, and after a few more conversations, then we ended up consummating the trade.
How hard would it have been to turn down a first-round pick? I mean, obviously, it could be a high pick. I mean, for a guy going in his 10th year that is going to have his contract's up next year. I mean, it must have been, when they offered you a first-round pick, it was really, must have been an easy decision to make.
Well, you know, we gave it a lot of thought. Again, I think we certainly gave up, you know, a significant player, and we received significant compensation in return. So, you know, I think in balance, we, you know, felt good about what we did, but we understand that we relinquished a player too.
When you're looking at a first round draft pick in 2011, how much do you take into consideration where you might be with a new collective bargaining agreement? A lot has been made in the last day or two about the possibility of having a rookie slotted cap or slots for each one of those spots. Does that increase the value of something like that? Why 2011? Why not 2010, let's say?
Well, I think, Glenn, anytime you push a trade back a year, there's more value. That's a higher pick. It's a lower pick in the more current year. So just like we do in the draft, if you want to move up in a round, you give up your fifth round pick to move up in the fourth round. You give up your sixth round pick to move up in the fifth round. So and if you go into next year, then you give up next year's fourth for this year's fifth. So there's some time value there. I think that's historically the way the league looks at it. But again, in the end, it's hard to gauge the value of draft picks. You really can. It's an estimate. We usually try to estimate towards the middle of the round because it could go up, it could go down. And so we just do it on an estimated basis. And that's, as far as the contracts go, you know, we know what the rookie contracts are. Nobody knows what's going to happen with the new CBA. Those contracts might go up, they might go down. Nobody knows for sure. I think that regardless of what happens, that, you know, we, with the value that we received, we feel that, you know, we're willing to accept that, you know, this is the ballpark of where it's going to be. Might be a little better, might not be as good as the middle, but we'll, you know, that's unpredictable, and we're willing to accept that.
How do you replace his contributions on the field?
Well, I think it's a combination of people, and anytime you, you know, you play defense, you play team defense. You need 11 guys out there, and so what each guy's role is, not necessarily replicate somebody else's. It's a combination of a lot of people doing their job for the team to be successful defensively, and so that's what it'll be now. That's what it's always been.
And did the fact that you have what looks like should be a fairly high-powered offense, did that make it a little bit easier decision-wise?
I don't think that really played too much into it, Steve. I think it was just more of a decision of what our total situation was with the player and what the offer was. And considering this year, next year, and the 2011 season, because they're all kind of involved a little bit on balance, what's the best thing to do for the football team?
Does the makeup of the players that will replace him, you think it's more advantageous for a 4-3 instead of a 3-4 with you know, Green being a little smaller and that?
Well, we've worked on, you know, all that during the preseason, as you know, Fred, and so I think that our game plans there will be a combination of things, and we'll do what we feel like's best for any particular game or situation. I think we have flexibility in our defensive system, and we've practiced that through the years, but particularly this year in training camp. But so I think we feel comfortable that we can, you know, do what we need to do, given our playing against a particular opponent or in a given situation.
Would you ever consider trading that draft pick that you got for a high-quality corner or safety that popped up that might really help you right now?
Well, absolutely. I think that's one thing that you know, with draft picks, that they're currency. And if you need a player, whether it be Derek Burgess or Randy Moss or Wes Welker or some of the players that we've traded here, traded for here in the last few years, that if you have draft picks, that they're potentially veteran players. They're also potentially rookie players, or they're potentially tradable to move up or down in the draft or back a year, as the case might be. So it gives you flexibility, and certainly if you have more than one pick in a round, it makes it a little bit easier to trade those picks. So we don't have anything set planned with them, but I'm sure at some point we'll use them one way or another, and they'll help our football team.
So obviously every team knows that you have the picks, so they might be calling up saying, listen, we need this pick to help us. You know, we have so-and-so at safety for you. Would it work like that, or do you continually have calls put out to different teams?
Well, yeah, I think at this point nobody's really shopping draft picks. People are looking for players, and if Team A calls Team B and says, well, what about this player, then unless there's a equivalent player to exchange, which isn't very common in the NFL, it does happen, but it's less common than another compensation method is a draft pick, and then whatever you decide on, then that's you know, that's what consummates the deal.
Did you think the situation with Richard was possible, say, back in May or June, or is it something that's really just happened over the last 10 days or so?
Yeah, it wasn't something that we talked about back in the spring. It was something that has come up fairly recently, and that's when we started to give it some consideration. As I said, Oakland made mention of it early, or I'd say early, you know, a couple weeks ago, somewhere around the Burgess trade. But we didn't have any serious discussions. It all came down pretty fast, probably within about, I don't know, 6-8 hours, between Saturday and Sunday. And that's when it really happened. But they did mention it before then, but we just wasn't the right. We just didn't feel right about doing it at that point.
You said there were a lot of factors involved. How much of a factor was it that he's one of, I believe, is it 20 guys whose contracts will expire at the end of this year? So he was a guy that was already starting to get up there in age, had a fairly substantial contract that going forward might cost considerable money. How much did that play into it that this might be the last year?
Well, yeah, Glenn, I think there are a lot of factors in it, and some of the ones that you mentioned were, you know, part of a conversation. I mean, you know, we have to look at our football team this year and next year and the year after that, and not that we're, you know, build towards next year or another year. We want to win now, but next year is a consideration. It has to be. And that we take that into account when we acquire players, and also in a case like this where we, you know, where we trade one. So we have to, you know, we have to look at the composite of the team, and again, having that draft pick creates some options.
Some of the callers have called up and said they felt that you personally called Al Davis and talked him into the trade. Realistically, how much do you do on the phone to do none at all, just have the the player department call?
It varies. It varies. Again, this time of year, Fred, there are a lot of conversations about players throughout the league. Every team's calling and talking to other teams, and there's, you know, that's just part of the conversation. So it could be myself, it could be Floyd, it could be Nick, it could be Jason Light, it could be a lot of people. There's no real set formula. Sometimes some things pop up in one conversation or another, and then we bring them, talk about them as a group, and make a decision.
I wanted to ask you about that. What happens when you get down to the last 24 hours of Saturday, the cutdown date when you've got to get down to your 53? What conversations are going around the league from team to team of players that you know are probably going to get cut, but some team is trying to see if they can finagle and get something for them? And then what happens when you get to Sunday? Because it was interesting, we saw a movement, including a move by your team with Lewis, that came after you had already established your 53-man roster. How does all of that come about, Bill?
Well, it's pretty unpredictable, Glenn. You never really know how that's going to go. Sometimes, you find a team that's going to release a player, and depending on where you are in the claiming pecking order, if you're down at the bottom and you feel like somebody else is going to claim the player ahead of you, then you might want to consider trading for that player so that he never is truly exposed to waivers if you think there are other teams that are going to take him first if you want that player. And on the flip side of that, if you're a team that's releasing a player, then you'd take anything you can get. You know, so if you, rather than release the player and get nothing, if you could get anything from another team, you're probably willing to make that trade. So there's a little bit of that jockeying going back and forth. You don't sometimes know who's, you know, they say the team says they're going to release a player, but or they're not going to release a player, but in the end, maybe they will. And so then it comes down to, you know, 4 o'clock or whatever time the waiver wire comes in. You know, everybody's got to play their cards. After you play them the first day, then there's some more movement. Teams claim players. They release other players. And that secondary market, I think it's a little bit what happened on the Lockett acquisition, where we claim him off the waiver wire and then therefore had to release a player to make room for him. So that was one that we didn't expect. And, when it happened the second day, then, you know, we had to adjust our roster.
So you're at the 53-man limit right now?
Yes.
And there's no any moves that you anticipate in the next couple of days, or is that pretty much dead for most of the league?
You know, I would say, Steve, that with each day, it's probably less likely that there'll be a move. I mean, you have the 53 cut on Saturday to Sunday, and then Sunday to Monday, and Monday to Tuesday. And I think each day there are a few moves, but progressively less, you know, as things start to settle out. The practice squad's a part of that, and that's still, you know, everybody's trying to make that 8-man practice squad roster, find the right positions, find the right guys, get that set. So I think each day there's a little bit less of it. I'm sure that here by the end of the week there'll be kind of an equilibrium, and then as of next week there'll probably be a lot less movement than what there is this week. But I'd say a little bit less each day.
Because in that scenario, O'Connell was cut, Detroit picked him up, and then traded him. Were there any inquiries into his before he was cut?
You know, there really weren't, Fred. And I think, you know, you look at a team like Detroit, they're not going to trade for anybody. They don't, I shouldn't say that. They don't need to really trade for too many people because they have the first claim. Same thing with Kansas City in the third claiming spot when they claimed Ryan O'Callaghan, that they really don't have to trade for too many guys because, you know, they're going to get them on the claim unless they think that the player has trade value and he's going to go to somebody else. And if they really want him, then they will trade for him. But I'm just saying, though, Detroit got him on a waiver claim. There would be no need for them to claim him because they had first shot at him. So those are the kind of things that you have to, you know, you have to try to measure. And there's a lot of, it's sort of like draft day, really. There's a lot of talk, a lot of rumors, conversation going around. Probably 40% of it's true, 60% of it's,
like the
show. Big fish story.
Sort of like the show, yeah. I thought it was interesting, though, that the Jets, who are the second team on your schedule, ended up picking him up. Who was the coach this weekend that was already throwing it out there that he felt that a team had acquired a player simply?
Oh, the Giants. Giants when Washington picked up the quarterback.
Exactly. I mean, do you have any suspicions when the Jets go and pick up O'Connell here with game two on the schedule?
Well, I think any time you release a player, you have to understand that he can end up on another team. He can end up on another team in your division. He could end up on the next team on your schedule. So that's, you know, that's part of making that move, and it's, I think we've all been involved in that on both ways.
So it does happen in the league that you pick up a player. He can help you out with game plans, help you out with what a team's doing.
Yeah, I think, yes. Well, sure, he can. Sure, he has information, and he can help you, but I think roster spots are so valuable, and the players are so valuable, which ones you have, that I think that overrides, you know, getting information from somebody. And again, most teams change their game plan every week a little bit anyway, so I don't know how much value. I think that's a little overrated, really, how much value a player really brings to your team, even though he was with that team. You know, he might help you on a couple when they do this play or that play or another play, but you probably know most of that anyway if you're familiar with the team. And, you know, in the end, it's, you know, he might tell you about a play they haven't run before. Hey, you know, we have a reverse, and this is the formation we've run it from. You haven't seen it on film because they haven't shown it. But, again, those are pretty, they're pretty minor.
So are you okay going into, oh, sorry, Pete.
No, you're gonna ask
are you okay
time. Go ahead.
Going into Monday with two quarterbacks on the roster?
Well, that's what we have right now, and, you know, could that change? It could, but if it doesn't, then it'll be Brian and Tom.
Who's the emergency?
Steve?
What? He's been throwing a lot.
Zoe.
Oh, yeah. Zoe. Oh, yeah. There you go.
We had a Benjamin flag football. He couldn't throw a 10-yard out. He was looking each way. Pass it out the middle.
He's not lying.
Let me take a 90-second break. We'll come back, and we'll address the Buffalo Bills, opponent number one on Monday night. Talking with Bill Belichick right here on The Big Show.
You're listening to The Big Show with The Big O.
Huh? Never seen one that big, have you?
No, never.
This is the WEEI Sports Radio Network.
It's Patriots Monday here in the Big Show. We're live down here at Gillette Stadium talking with the coach, Bill Belichick. Buffalo Bills will be opponent number one coming up here on Monday night. How unusual is it when you're sitting here trying to address what the Buffalo Bills are going to do against you on Monday night to see an offensive coordinator, Gonzo, 8 days before the start of that first game?
Yeah, well, who says preseason doesn't mean anything? Three offensive coordinators.
Isn't that unbelievable?
Jacksonville. You get pork down there.
So does that?
Yeah, that's a little
bit more difficult for you in trying to figure out. You know what they've been doing in the preseason, and yet they may object to what Turk was doing, and they may do something totally different here.
Well, I'd be surprised if they try to put in a whole new offense. I think that you know, the coach Duran and you know has a basic foundation offensively of what they're doing. Is it going to be modified a little bit with a new coordinator? Well, I'm sure it is, but heading into opening day, you don't know exactly what they're going to do anyway. You've seen the preseason games, but we all know everybody holds something back in preseason, and so we have to be ready for a lot of things that we haven't seen in the preseason games. What exactly they'll be and what Coach Van Pelt will come up with, I don't know. But that's part of opening day. So it's always hard to get ready. You've got all last year's film and then all the preseason games, and then, there's other stuff that they haven't done. So it's a high volume. I think you got to be careful about defending a lot of ghosts, about worrying too much about they could do this, they could do that, they could do something else. In the end, you win and lose out there on a football field with what you can do. And, a new play here or there, that's nice. But all the other plays, they count a lot too. So.
Yeah, but they've been running that offense for a long time now, mini camps and all that stuff. And, you got a week left, you got to dramatically change everything.
I can't imagine. I can't imagine.
It seemed like you watched the defense in the summer. It looked like they're putting in, obviously, the no huddle. Seemed like Edwards had a little bit of trouble with that faster-paced offense. You think they'll go a lot with that?
I think they will run the no huddle. Yes, I do. And they've run a couple different varieties of it in the preseason. Sometimes with three receivers, sometimes with two. Sometimes they substitute a little bit on third down to go from a two receiver set to a three receiver set, things like that. But again, we have to be ready for a lot of different things. I'm sure that they haven't shown everything that they've got with that. Terrell Owens has only played a handful of plays in preseason. He'll help them considerably wherever they put him, whether it's in the slot or outside. So, when they get everything out there, just like every team in the league, once you get into the regular season and teams start game planning for you and you get their best shot and they're not just out there, running plays like we have in preseason, then after three or four games, everybody will kind of find out where they're at. And nobody really knows that going into the year. Makes it exciting.
What does a player like T.O. Bring to their offense, and does he still have enough to help them out a lot?
Well, it looked like he did in Dallas. He's big. He's very physical, and he can get down the field. He's a big receiver, and he runs well straight ahead. So, he's tough on short catch and run patterns because he's hard to tackle, and he's tough on vertical patterns against some of the smaller quarterbacks. So just lob it up there to him, let him go get it. I think he's definitely a factor in the game, along with a very good receiving core with him. And where they'll position them all, Parrish, Josh Reed, Evans, T.O., whether it'll be four receivers, whether it'll be three receivers, things like that are all questions that, we're not going to know until Monday night.
He's a strider. Doesn't look like he cuts real well in short patterns.
Yeah, he's kind of the opposite of Parrish. Parrish is a very quick stop-and-go, change of direction guy that can be going full speed and change directions 180 degrees on a dime. And T.O. is a big, powerful guy that runs through tacklers. Yeah, he is. He's almost a tight end size that can run through tacklers, that can run over people, that can go up and get the ball and out-jump guys and take it away from them. So, he and Parrish, I'd say, are kind of at the opposite ends of the spectrum, both effective receivers with completely different styles.
Aaron Schobel is healthy again. He's the guy that's caused you guys difficulty over in the past. And the kid Maben. Tell us a little bit about him.
Well, Maben played in the last two preseason games against Pittsburgh and Detroit, and he's a very good upfield rusher. He's got a lot of speed. He came around the corner against Detroit and beat Backus, who's a good tackle, their starting left tackle, beat him around the edge, strips out the quarterback. So I think he had some speed to their pass rush, along with their other ends, Kelsey and Denny, who can play outside but also have the potential to move inside. So it'll be interesting to see how all that shapes up, and of course, there's always a possibility they could take a player like Maben, who they played on both sides, both at right end and left end, and move him around, and make him kind of like a wild card kind of guy in the pass rush. So there's a lot of different things they could do, but he's fast, and he's a guy that if he gets half a step, that he can close on a quarterback, and it's not only a sack, it could be a strip sack.
They're more of an upfield one gap team. They penetrate. and put pressure on at all times, and that leaves certain things open. Are they as effective as they were last year during, if you watch them preseason? Because they do have guys that get off the ball a little bit undersized but have good quickness.
They have real good quickness. It looks to me like in preseason, Fred, they're a little better than they were last year. Last year they made a big jump from kind of at the bottom of the league defensively, statistically, to between 15 and 10 in most categories, although they were very good in the red area last year. Watching them in preseason, they already have 14 turnovers. I think it's 9 interceptions. They've done a real good job of taking the ball away. I mean, that's a lot of turnovers for 4 games. So, you know, they've got a better pass rush. They're more experienced, and seems like they kind of recognize things a little quicker, jump them quicker, and I've got a couple big guys inside, you know, like Williams and of course Stroud, that are hard to move in there and speed on the edge. So, looks like they're better defensively. And they were a lot better last year. So it's a team that's it's like each time they play together, they get a little bit better.
One thing we do know is that Bobby April's special team squads are always at the top of the league. And we've seen them over the last couple of years. Special teams actually, you know, win games, score more points than the offense or the defense for them. You know, at times. Happened last year at the end, I think, against the Jets where they almost pulled it out.
Yeah, they're very good in the kicking game, Pete. And they're good at everything. They return the ball very well. You know, the last 2 years they've led the league in punt returns. And if they were to lead the league again in punt returns this year, it'd be the first time since 1943 that a team's led the league 3 years in a row. So it's pretty special what they're doing. Kickoff returns, it doesn't matter who runs them back, McKelvin, McGee, they're right at the top of the league there, too. Last year they were second in punt coverage, and Mormon's a very good plus 50 punter, and I think they were, you know, in the top 5 in kickoff coverage. So they can cover them, they can return them. They have good specialists, they have very good returners. They're very good in a kicking game, and that's always dangerous because one play can a lot can happen on that. They can, you know, score from anywhere or create a big play in a coverage team and put you inside your 5 or 10 yard line on a punt, things like that. So they're very dangerous there.
People have spent a lot of time during the preseason trying to figure out whether you're a 4-3 team based defense, whether you're a 3-4. You've described it as it depends who we're playing. We may do a lot of different things. Has any of that changed from what we've seen in the last couple of years? And does Richard Seymour's absence mean anything in how you change your base defense?
Well, I think that our decisions will be made based on our personnel and what we feel like we have to stop. Most important thing we have to stop with our opponents. And that's the way it's always been. So we'll make those decisions on a weekly basis. I think we have some flexibility. There were times last year when, you know, we played a lot of 3-4 defense, and I think there'll be times this year where we'll want to do that. And then there are other times where we played less 3-4 and more of something else. So how all that's going to go, I don't know. And some of them sure will depend on how well we do. If we're doing well in one particular front or one particular coverage or one style of play, then, you know, maybe we'll do a little bit more of that.
Do you think that makes it more?
I think we saw last year, I guess the best way to answer that question, Glenn, is I think we saw last year offensively that we had a very productive offense in 2008, and we had a very productive offense in 2007, but they were different. We found different ways to move the ball. We found different ways to score points. We found different ways to win games. And the challenge for the 2009 team this year is to find those ways. What are they? I don't know that I know the answer to that question right now. Some of it will evolve. But in the end, we'll do the best we can to find the ways to win. And it might be different from what it's been in the past. It might be different from what it was last year. And it might be even different through the course of the year.
Work in progress.
Just have to see how it progresses.
Well, I find it funny, though, that everyone keeps bringing up the fronts. When you played the Bills back in the Super Bowl, you ran a two-man front.
Two-man.
You played Buffalo a couple years ago, you ran a one-man front. And then all of a sudden, the San Diego, you run four fronts. You run overs, you run unders, you run four fronts, you run a six-man front. I mean, you've always done that. Is this any different? I mean, you've always run a multitude of fronts.
I don't see it a whole lot differently, Fred.
It's the reporters. They don't. Can't see. Well, I can't see.
You know, you go back.
I had inserted somewhere that I can't see.
Yeah, you go back to 2001, and we were a 3-4 team through the first really 10 games of the season, and then we became more of a 4-3 team in the second half of the season, and you know, went on to play some of our best defense at the end of the year after Brian Cox and Ted Johnson got hurt, and Teddy took over as a middle linebacker, and he went on to play extremely well, probably better than he had as a 3-4 linebacker. So, you know, sometimes those things happen at the beginning or in the middle or at the end of the year, and, you know, coach doesn't even know how it's going to work out. You know,
teams that do that, chameleons, constantly changing up what they have to like that. for what they have to be for that team? You don't like that? Does that make it more difficult in preparation for that week and trying to figure it out as opposed to this is what they always do? They stay in their base, you know, other than if you're bringing in a few extra DBs in a passing situation. But you know that what they're going to do. If you're constantly changing up and you're looking at video and saying, what the hell are they doing now? Does that make it more – they have to put more hours, I would think, into the preparation.
Well, I think it goes both ways. As Fred and Steve know better than I, defensively, you have to react to what the offense does. And if you're always in the same place, once you see it, then you can react to it a lot better the second time. So you get a new blocking scheme, but then you get that same blocking scheme again when you're in the same defense, and you know what happened the first time, you know how to react to it the second time. You get your linebacker reads the second time. You might get you once on it, but they're not going to get you the second time. But, you know, if you're changing defenses, then, yes, it creates some problems for the offense, but it also creates problems for the defense because, you know, one time you're in this defense and they ran the play, and the next time you're in another defense and they run the play, and it doesn't look quite the same to you. So both, there's a place for both. I think there's, positive points on both sides. And we do both. Sometimes we sit in it and try to recognize it. Other times we try to, have a little bit more deception and try to make them find us. And I think there's a place for both.
You just killed me. You just told these
that's
two guys.
That's a great thought.
They won't know more than you about something.
I'm going to have to live with this.
I have to live with this now.
Listen, pipe down, all right?
No, we ran all over it. When I was playing nose tackle, we ran all over it and under all the time. After the audible, you move it so he doesn't have time to change the blocking.
Which we were more prone to jump off sides on, the over or the under?
I was on the movement of the ball.
I'm just asking. Coach, you could look at this defense, and there's some veteran leadership that's not there this year between Vrabel and Bruschi and Seymour and even Harrison. Where does that leadership come from defensively?
Well, I think it comes from all the players on the defensive side of the ball, but I think we've had some young players in the first, second year, Gerard Mayo, Gary Guyton, Brandon Merriweather, guys like that have, emerged, James Sanders, that have taken a solid role on our football team, both on and off the field and communication. You know, each team has its own chemistry, and you just can't, as a coach, you just can't dictate that. It has to happen. And who the leaders become, who the communicators become, who the teammates look up to, that'll be an evolution. And it is every year. I mean, certain players start there, but, they don't necessarily always finish there. It just depends on how things go that year. We played a good part of the season last year without Rodney, unfortunately. And so that was an adjustment we had to make during the year that, the circumstances dictated it. So. But I like the way that our team approaches the game. I like their work ethic. I like their communication. And I think we've been in four close games in preseason. And I think that the fact that that's been a good experience for us. We've had to play under pressure at the end of the game as an entire team. I know that, there were sometimes players at the end of the game that, might not see a lot of playing time this week or aren't even on the roster. But from a team standpoint, we experienced those competitive games in preseason. I think that was good for us.
All right, one final question. You've been doing this for quite a while. You still get butterflies? First opening night, first game? You still get that nervous feeling?
Oh, absolutely. This is the one. This is the one. I think after the first game, you have a better idea of where your team is. And after the second game, you have a better idea than the first game. And, by the time you get to that fourth, fifth, sixth game, you've seen enough matchups with your opponents. They've blitzed you, they played zone, they played man, you've seen some big guys, you've seen some fast guys, you've seen some quick guys, and you kind of get a sense of, how you match up against certain players, against certain schemes, and how your team's going to perform. And that's, that's what we call midseason. And no team's there yet, and I think there's always that anticipation and the butterflies of, how's it really going to go?
I did see that commercial, by the way, that you were talking about with the guy in the hoodie.
Now, heavy as that guy.
No,
it's the colors of his uniform.
Oh, I thought that was like a lookalike. That guy. Well,
The camera.
Look at who's talking.
The
over
camera
there.
Puts 10 pounds on you.
80,
we got
80.
We got three or four cameras in this room right now, so that's what we problem.
I said I was gonna. That was the last question, but I lied because I figured that Fred and Pete were gonna ask the question. How's that number 12 doing? Is he okay? And number 12?
Don't even answer
Kid,
that.
Is he okay?
Don't dignify
okay.
that with a name.
I just wanted to know.
Have you been able to take tell the difference between Edelman and Wes Welker on the field. Boy, those guys look like clones.
Edelman's
they do, clone. And it's funny in the in some of the rookie shows, Edelman has you know kind of imitated Welker as part of the show. So it's that there are some similarities, definitely. You know,
they
it's pretty funny.
Yeah. Hi, Bill.
Long
good luck.
Imitates them on the field.
Have a great season. We'll be back here next Tuesday, the afternoon after game game one. Have a good one.
All right, sounds good. Thanks, fellas.
Thanks, coach.
Bill Belichick, right here on the Big Show.